Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
It all comes down to this. An inmate claims that Ron Logan confessed to the Delphi murders back in 2017. And prosecutor Nick McClellan ignored 8 separate letters about it before Richard Allen was ever put on trial. It's a big allegation. And if true, that's not just a legal oversight. That's a bombshell, a potential cover-up that could mean the wrong man is behind bars, while the real killers were never even pursued. And the biggest question in all this, why? Why would a prosecutor whose job is to seek justice bury information that could have changed the entire case? Here's what we know. Back in 2017, Ron Logan was an obvious suspect. His property is where Abby Williams and Libby German were found murdered. His alibi did not check out, and an FBI search warrant even stated that there was probable cause to believe Logan was involved. Yet, he was never charged. And now, thanks to the claims of inmate Rishi Davis, we have reason to believe that Logan himself admitted to the murders while he was in prison. Not only that, he allegedly told Davis that 2 other people were involved. But what makes this even more damaging? Logan also reportedly said that prosecutor Nick McClellan was a longtime family friend who would make sure he was never charged. Now, that's something we cannot confirm nor deny here. We do not know the answer to that. That is a claim made by Rishi Davis. There's no evidence that we can see that confirms that claim whatsoever. Doesn't mean it's out there. We just haven't seen it. Well, anything is possible. But as of now, that is a claim. That's an allegation that's being made by Rishi Davis. Now, if you're sitting there thinking, wait a second, this is huge. If there was even a chance that this was true, why wouldn't investigators go after it? Well, you're not alone in that thinking. That's exactly what Allen's defense team is arguing. They want to know why these claims were ignored, why Davis's letters never made it into discovery, and whether prosecutors deliberately suppressed exculpatory evidence. That's a legal nightmare for the state, because if they withheld information that could have helped Allen, that's a major violation of his constitutional rights. And it's kind of a thing that can get convictions overturned and people's careers destroyed. So, Let's break these allegations down. Rishi Davis, who is currently serving 50 years for drug trafficking, was in the same cell block as both Ron Logan and Keegan Klein at different points in time, and we're going to talk about both. During his time with Logan, he says that Logan gave a detailed step-by-step confession about the murders, telling him things that only the actual killer would know. That's a bold claim. We have to consider the source, a jailhouse inmate. Jailhouse informants don't always have the best track record. And here's the part that makes this different. Logan supposedly told Davis that a box cutter was used in the murders. That single detail, it's key. It was not publicly known or confirmed until Allen's trial in 2024. This conversation happened back in 2017. Rishi Davis would not know that information. So how could Davis have known that unless Logan actually told him? Davis, believing this was critical information, says he immediately went to authorities. He claims he was willing to wear a wire to record Logan saying it again. A wire. And also keep in mind, Rishi Davis also said, I want nothing for this. I'm not doing this to get leniency on my sentence. This has nothing to do with me or my sentence or my incarceration. I'm not doing this for that. I'm doing this because it's right. I have kids too, and I think this is bullshit. Not looking for anything. Willing to wear a wire. Not just, here, I'm going to write this down and give it to you. Hear it for yourself. I'll get it for you. Law enforcement? You'd think they'd be like, okay, let's do this. At least give it a shot. Well, their answer? Nah, Mr. Davis, it isn't necessary, really. Keep in mind, there's no suspects at this time. Other than Ron Logan, who wasn't even really officially a suspect on the local end of things. But on the federal end of things with the FBI, I don't think he's ever truly been dismissed. He's just died. Anyway, that alone should raise some alarms that, nah, we don't need you to do the wire thing. Why wouldn't investigators jump on the chance to gather more evidence? Instead, Davis says they told him to condense Logan's confession into two paragraphs. We know you have all this information here. There's a lot you want to tell us. Summarize it in two paragraphs, please, like it's a description for a podcast. Can't be bothered by reading more than that with our precious eyes. They even threatened him with perjury charges if he wasn't telling the truth. And he's just trying to tell the truth in its entirety. But two paragraphs, here's your two paragraphs. Doesn't sound like law enforcement really trying to solve a case at that moment in time. It sounds like law enforcement trying to make a problem go away. Fast forward to 2024, Richard Allen is on trial and Davis sees something that stops him in his tracks. The forensic experts confirm that a box cutter was the murder weapon, something Logan had allegedly told him years earlier. That's when Davis realizes that Logan's confession might actually be real, and that's when he decides to start writing more letters. 7, maybe 8, all addressed to Carroll County Prosecutors Nick McClelland, spelling out exactly what he knew, and yet every single letter was ignored. Not just unanswered, ignored. Why? Well, that's the part that doesn't make a whole lot of sense here. If you're the prosecutor in a high-profile murder case and an inmate tells you the man whose property was the crime scene admitted to the killings, how do you just let that sit? Not even look into it. Yeah. Ron Logan also lied about it. He made up an alibi before anything even happened, before anybody even knew the girls were missing or dead. He's telling his friend, lie about where I was. He got caught in that lie. His cell phone actually puts him at the place of the crime scene as well. Allen's defense argues that McClelland deliberately buried this information, that he never shared the letters with the defense, and that this could be grounds for a mistrial or even a full-blown case dismissal. And if that's true, it's not just a mistake, it's prosecutorial misconduct. That's not good. Again, all allegations could be complete BS. We don't know the answer to it. We're just discussing it and reporting it. Now, as of our recording right now, McClelland has not responded to these allegations in any meaningful way. He hasn't confirmed or denied receiving the letters. He hasn't explained why his office never investigated Davis's claims. And here's the kicker. The defense has formally requested these letters. They want them preserved, turned over, and accounted for. If McClelland received them and didn't disclose them, that's a big problem. If they were conveniently lost somewhere along the way, that's an even bigger problem. Because as we know, they're good at losing things or taping over things. So that's where we're at. We have a confession that was allegedly ignored. We have a prosecutor who may have had personal ties to one of the original suspects. A big, big may there. That's the allegation. Again, we cannot confirm that. We have evidence that might have been buried before trial. And now we have a defense team that wants answers. Because if McClelland really did have a prior relationship with Logan, and if he did suppress evidence, that could have cleared Allen. Then we aren't just talking about a wrongful conviction. We're talking about a complete failure of justice. Again, a lot of allegations, a lot of maybes in there. If. That's where we got to get to the bottom of this. We got to figure out what happened to these letters. Could they have just been missing? Could they have never have gotten to McClelland? Yeah, that's a possibility. Could McClelland have somehow like buried them, missed them, not intentionally? Yeah. It's not a good look. It's really not at all a good look. That's really, really unprofessional. And then the other possibility is, were they intentionally not shared? Were they intentionally lost? Were they intentionally not shared? Those are questions that need to be answered. Because this just isn't about the prosecutor. It's about who else knew. It's about the judge who made critical rulings in this case. It's about law enforcement's role in steering the investigation away from certain suspects and why. It's about what else is still hidden and what it could mean for Richard Allen's future. Let's talk about another piece in this case. Judge Fran Gull was not supposed to be a problem here. When she was appointed as the special judge in the Delphi murders trial, the idea was that she'd bring impartiality to a case that had already been bogged down by small-town conflicts of interest. The local Carroll County judges all recused themselves, likely because they had ties to people involved, or maybe they just wanted to avoid the circus altogether, or maybe something else. So the case was handed to Judge Gull, a veteran judge from Allen County, someone who, at least in theory, had no skin in the game. But instead of being the neutral party that many hope for, her rulings have raised serious concerns about fairness, transparency, and whether Richard Allen ever had a real shot at proving his innocence in court. You know, like judges should do. Let's be clear. Judges shape trials in ways most people don't even realize. They decide what evidence can be presented, which arguments a jury is allowed to hear, and most importantly, what stays out of the courtroom entirely. That's where this story takes a turn. Because time and time again, Judge Gull's decision seemed to favor the prosecution, making it nearly impossible for Allen's defense team to introduce alternative suspects or crucial evidence that could have cast serious, reasonable doubt on the state's case. And in a trial that relied on circumstantial evidence, weak forensic links at best, and a jailhouse confession under questionable conditions, you have to ask, why was a jury only given one version of events? One of the most controversial rulings in this case came when Allen's defense tried to introduce evidence of alternative suspects. Now, normally, if a defense team can present a solid argument that someone else might have committed the crime, the jury is at least allowed to hear it. That's how reasonable doubt works. But in this case, Judge Gull shut it down completely. The defense team had been building a theory, one that involved Ron Logan, his two alleged accomplices, and a group that practiced Odinism, a fringe pagan belief system. They argued that there were symbols at the crime scene, details that suggested a ritualistic killing, and multiple people who may have been involved, at the very least. They wanted the jury to know about the other viable suspects out there. But Judge Gall would not allow it. She ruled that the defense failed to show a direct connection between these suspects and the murders, and because of that, she barred the evidence from being presented in court. Let's pause for a second, because that decision is a big deal. It means that the jury never got to hear any alternative theory about what happened that day. The only story they were allowed to consider was the one put forward by the prosecution, that Richard Allen, acting alone, carried out the murder with no accomplices, no motive, no prior criminal history that would suggest he was capable of such an act. Now, the whole guy where the property he owned, the bodies were found on, made up the fake alibi. Phone puts him at the scene of the crime. The FBI is involved raiding his house, raiding his property. Then the FBI gets kicked off the case by the local authorities, saying, "We got it. Now that report you gave us, we're good. We don't even really look at it very much. We're good." Yeah. Those are the other viable, or that's one of the other viable suspects that Judge Gall said, not viable. And then there's the guy that, you know, is into kiddie porn that the government's actually keeping track of at this point in time, that they see is communicating with one of the girls leading up to and the day of their murder, talking about meeting up with her. That guy also not a viable suspect. Not at all. Judge Gall's legal justification was that without clear forensic or physical links, presenting these alternative suspects could be prejudicial, basically that it would confuse the jury with theories that weren't backed by direct evidence. There's a lot of direct evidence there. A lot, Judge Gall. A lot of direct evidence. May not say that they killed them, but direct evidence that they were somehow involved in this, or likely involved in this, or physically there, or physically communicating with them. Oh, and one goes away for child porn. The other goes away in a violation of probation for being an abusive piece of shit. That's Ron Logan. It's a fair concern in some cases when there's not direct evidence. But here's the problem. The state's case against Richard Allen didn't have clear forensic or physical links either. There was no DNA tying him to the crime scene, no eyewitness placing him there at the exact time of the murders, and the only physical evidence was an unspent bullet found near the bodies, which would have fit in Allen's gun under highly questionable forensic testing. Not to mention you had 30, 40 or more police officers all trampling around that scene, and then they find the bullet, which would likely fit in almost any of their guns as well. But no, it must be the hiker who raised his hand in 2017 and said, "Hey, I was there, how can I help?" The bullet that was found after all of that. Must be his. He must have killed them. No criminal history, nothing. If the prosecution was allowed to build a case on circumstantial evidence, why wasn't the defense allowed to present circumstantial evidence of alternative suspects, Judge Gall? It's a fair question. You'll probably never answer it. We'll just throw it out there into the ether, and everyone else can answer it too, with their opinions, with their theories, with their guesses. Or you can come up and tell us why. What are we missing here? You just deny, move on, continue on with your career, whatever. It's not like people's lives haven't been ruined. Not accusing anybody of doing anything of misconduct. Just saying what happened, why, Why did you come to that conclusion? Because when you look at this, A plus B equals C. Not the equation you guys are playing with. Maybe it's blinders. Maybe she just really thought, you know, she's trusting the work of the investigators and you end up getting blinders on that way. Everybody here is human, so we can't dismiss that as a possibility. We also need to look at reality and where the evidence takes us and the actions of those involved. And that's where we're at today. That's why we're asking questions of McClelland. That's why we're asking questions of Judge Gull. This wasn't just a minor ruling. It fundamentally shaped the outcome of a trial. If jurors had heard that Ron Logan had allegedly confessed to another inmate, that two other people were involved, and that there was potential evidence suggesting a ritualistic killing, would they have been as quick to convict Richard Allen? Would they have questioned why the state never seriously investigated these other suspects? The defense argued that by blocking the evidence, the jury was never given a full picture. And instead, they were left with only one possible suspect, the one the prosecution had decided was guilty from day one. From day one, I mean like years later when they go back and say, we got nobody here. Shit, Ron's dead. Keegan's over here for this. I know the guy from CVS that has no history in this who raised his hand and said, how can I help? And the problems did not stop there. After Allen's conviction, his defense team filed multiple motions accusing Judge Gull of mishandling key aspects of the case. One of the biggest complaints was how she handled the withdrawal of Allen's original attorneys. See, in the midst of all this, Allen's first set of defense lawyers were forced to withdraw from the case under controversial circumstances. They had allegedly mishandled confidential documents, which led to a major dispute over legal ethics and whether they could continue to represent him. When they were removed, Allen was left with a new defense team, one that had far less time to prepare for his trial. His attorneys argued that Judge Gull should have given them more time to get up to speed, but she refused, pushing the trial forward on schedule. The defense saw this as yet another example of the court favoring the prosecution. Instead of ensuring that Allen had a fair trial with lawyers who were fully prepared to defend him, the judge prioritized speed over fairness, making it harder for his new attorneys to challenge the state's case directly. This isn't just like a minor procedural issue. In a capital case where somebody's life is on the line, ensuring that the defense has enough time to build their case is a fundamental part of due process. Eventually did get his attorneys back after the Indiana Supreme Court had to step in and say, you can't fire his defense attorneys for bringing up stuff you don't like. She didn't like that. She didn't really have a choice. After the trial, the defense took things a step further. They actually tried to have Judge Gull removed from the case, arguing that she was too biased to continue overseeing post-trial motions. They even listed her as a potential witness, essentially accusing her of misconduct and how she handled the trial. But the Indiana Supreme Court wasn't having it. They reviewed the claims and ultimately kept Gull on the case, dismissing the allegations against her. So where does this leave us now? On paper, Judge Gull was supposed to be an impartial figure, an out-of-town judge brought in to ensure fairness in one of the most high-profile murder cases Indiana has ever seen. But in reality, her rulings consistently benefited the prosecution, limiting what the defense could present, shaping the narrative in the state's favor, and ensuring that the jury never heard anything that might suggest Richard Allen wasn't the right guy. Now, maybe all this was just by-the-book legal procedure. Maybe she genuinely believed that the alternative suspect theories weren't strong enough to be presented to the jury. Maybe. But when you add it all up, the blocked evidence, the rushed timeline, and the way the trial was stacked against the defense, it raises serious questions about whether Richard Allen ever had a real chance at proving his innocence. And that is the problem. Because this case isn't just about what happened in the courtroom. It's about what happened that led up to it. It's about who made the decisions behind the scenes It's not just the judge's chambers, but the prosecutor's office, and the sheriff's department, and the entire law enforcement apparatus that built this case from the ground up. It's about what was investigated, what was ignored, and why certain names never made it into the final narrative. Because once you start asking those questions, you realize that there's a lot of people with a lot of things to lose if this case ever falls apart. From the very start, law enforcement had a problem in the Delphi case. And the problem had a name: Ron Logan. He owned the land where the bodies were found. He gave an alibi that immediately fell apart. His phone data, suspiciously, put him very close to the scene of the crime, which happened to be his yard. And yet, despite all of that, he was never charged with the murders. Instead, authorities seemed to shift away from him just as quickly as they zeroed in on him. That raises a very simple but troubling question. It's three letters. Why? To understand how this happened, you have to go back to the early days of the investigation in March of 2017, just a month after the murders. The FBI was already looking hard at Ron Logan. They executed a search warrant on his property, and the supporting affidavit laid out some very compelling reasons why they believed he could be involved. First, Logan lied about his whereabouts on the day of the murders, something you probably shouldn't do if you're being questioned about a murder. And he planned that alibi with his buddy before anybody publicly knew the girls were murdered. A little weird. He claimed that a friend drove him to a store at the exact time the girls were believed to be killed. The problem? That friend later admitted Logan asked him to lie for him. Shoot. That doesn't stand up. Which, to I think any common sense person or an investigator, would go, some big red flag. He's lying about his alibi. And the girls are dead on his property. Second, cell phone records. Investigators tracked Logan's phone data, and it placed him near the crime scene when the girls would have been alive. That's not just bad luck. That's a direct contradiction of his alibi. And third, his past. Logan has a storied history of violence, particularly towards women. He had been arrested multiple times for domestic abuse and drunk driving, including one case where he reportedly threatened a woman's life. He actually beat her on the head with a wrench. She had to go to the hospital. She talks about it. It's his ex-girlfriend. She even talks about how uncomfortable she felt with him around kids. Sold a horse to a girl down the road, and he was really uncomfortably touchy-feely with her. And she brought it up, and he's like, oh, it's nothing. You know, it's just, you know, like predators do. To law enforcement, this was a guy who had the motive, the proximity, and a clear reason to lie about where he was that day. So what happened? Why wasn't he arrested? The official answer is that there wasn't enough physical evidence linking him directly to the crime. But that really doesn't explain why law enforcement seemed to move on so quickly. And what do you mean? There's a lot of evidence here. It's a hell of a lot more than a stray bullet that could really belong to any of the 30, 40 officers trampling through the scene. Not just a random hiker who said, how can I help you? But they ended up going with the, you know, the CVS random hiker guy because of the bullet. That must be him. Wouldn't it be the other guy with the messed up alibi and being pinged at the scene and all that? Was it because Logan was too obvious of a suspect? Were they afraid they'd hit another dead end? Or was there something else at play? Something that made authorities steer away from him, even when the evidence was leading straight to his doorstep? Were they about to hit something else, or someone else, that had the power not to be discovered? It wouldn't be the first time investigators in this case ignored an obvious suspect. That brings us to Keegan Klein and the mysterious Anthony Schatz social media account. This is where the case takes a bizarre and even more disturbing turn. Keegan Klein was not some random guy who pulled into the Delphi investigation by accident. He was identified almost immediately as someone worth looking into, because in February of 2017, just days after the murders, Indiana State Police traced a fake online profile called Anthony Schatz back to Keegan Klein's home in Peru, Indiana. That profile had been catfishing young girls, pretending to be a male model, and most importantly, communicating with Libby German in the days leading up to her murder. Nothing to see here. This should have been a massive red flag. A 27-year-old man pretending to be a teenager messing and messaging with one of the victims shortly before her death. Even talking about meeting up with her the day she dies. That's something they ignored, but it's not something you should ignore. And for some reason, law enforcement, in this case, did just that. Walked away. Instead of arresting Klein in 2017, considering he was catfishing minors, they sat on that information for 3 years, you know, give him more chance to catch some young prey. Or catch young prey for someone else. He wasn't charged with anything until 2020, and even then it was only for child exploitation crimes. Only. But it was nothing related to Delphi. It wasn't until 2021, when the case had gone cold, that police publicly linked Klein to the investigation and admitted that they'd been investigating him for years. Why the delay? Why did it take 3 years to arrest a man who was already known to be soliciting explicit photos from underage girls? Is there someone else in Delphi I'm not aware of that's benefiting from this in a sick, horrible way? And does it want to be found out? I don't know. I don't know who that would be or what the answer to that question is, but starting to think maybe there is. I could be completely wrong, but I'm not naming any names because I don't know. I don't know any names, honestly. But it does start to feel like something is being, or someone is being covered for here. Or ones. Here's where things get even more suspicious. Klein has claimed that in 2017, law enforcement told him they knew he wasn't involved in the Delphi murders. They cleared him. Despite the fact that he had been in contact with Libby German, had a long history of sexual exploitation of minors, and had searched for information about the case online after the murders. And if it wasn't enough, he later flunked a polygraph test when asked if he knew anything about the killing. So that polygraph, we're going to say, didn't happen. It doesn't go along with her narrative. But the guy who has the letters, he flunks his polygraph, miserably failed it. Miserably. When did you do this polygraph exactly? Did you even do this polygraph? Then in 2024, another twist. Rishi Davis, the same inmate who claimed Ron Logan confessed, also claimed that Klein later admitted he had inside knowledge of the murders. Davis said that while they were both incarcerated, Klein was obsessed with whether Logan had mentioned his name in their prison conversations. Even more chilling, Davis said Klein eventually started admitting things only the killer would know. That he expressed relief when Richard Allen was convicted because it meant he was no longer a suspect. Whew. Oh, glad. Glad you got that one off your chest, Keegan. Because no one would suspect you being the child predator that you are. You were communicating with one of the girls right up until she was murdered. Clears you. Why did the investigators do this? Why? This raises a massive problem for law enforcement. And again, these are all allegations. You can't prove any of this as of now. This raises a massive problem for law enforcement. They spent years telling the public that Klein had no connection to the crime. But if Davis is telling the truth, that means law enforcement may have dismissed him a little bit too soon. Worse, it means they could have been protecting him. But are they really protecting Keegan Klein? Are they protecting what Keegan Klein leads to? Were they protecting what Ron Logan led to? At this point, we have two men, Ron Logan and Keegan Klein, both of whom had major red flags, both of whom had damning evidence against them, and yet neither was charged. Which brings us to the question no one in law enforcement wants to answer. Was evidence ignored, lost, or buried? And was it to protect certain individuals? In 2022, a former Carroll County deputy named Michael Thomas filed a lawsuit claiming he was demoted for questioning how the Delphi case was being handled. Someone on the inside being a whistleblower. Not a good idea in Delphi if you'd like to keep your job. Thomas alleged that when he pushed for outside forensic experts to be brought in early in the investigation, higher-ups shut him down, allegedly. According to him, there was internal pushback anytime someone suggested bringing in fresh eyes on the case. If true, that suggests a deliberate effort to control the direction of the investigation. And then there's the issue of missing evidence. Davis says he sent 8 letters to prosecutor Nick McClellan detailing Logan's confession. Yet as of right now, us recording this, none of those letters have been accounted for. The defense has formally requested them, but McClellan's office has not confirmed whether they exist, whether they were destroyed, or whether they were ever reviewed in the first place. Even more, Davis claims that law enforcement videotaped an interview with him about Logan's confession. But again, no one can seem to find it. If those materials were intentionally erased or hidden, it would be a devastating revelation. And by the way, it wouldn't be the first time evidence goes missing in this case. All the questioning that they did with many of the people that we're talking about right now, they had done that, but then they lost it. They accidentally taped over the DVR with new episodes of Matlock. No, I don't know what they taped over it with, but they said they taped over it. Whoops. So all that evidence is gone. Could be exculpatory. Oh, no, no, it's not. It's not exculpatory at all. We deleted it, and it's nothing to see here. Well, how do we know that? I mean, well, we took a couple notes that says kind of what it was about. Well, you took notes that said who was there. It's a little chicken scratch here about it. I'd like to see the videos, please. It's gone. It's gone. They're good at making shit disappear. Again, all this leads to one last unavoidable question. Was there a cover-up? If so, who was being protected? Was it Ron Logan? Was it Keegan Klein? Was it someone else entirely? Or was it about protecting the egos or the integrity of law enforcement itself? Because let's be real, if they got this case wrong, if they pinned it on the wrong guy while ignoring key evidence, that's not just incompetence, that's a complete failure of justice. That brings us back to Richard Allen, the man currently sitting in prison for these murders. If the investigation into Delphi was tainted from the start, if certain suspects were given a pass, if key evidence was never disclosed, the case against him is built on a foundation of sand. The more they look into what happened behind the scenes, the harder it becomes to shake the feeling that this case is far, far, far from over.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. You just made it through an episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Congrats on surviving the ads. Want to skip them completely next time?
What is that?
Join the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel on Apple Podcasts. Ad-free episodes, exclusive early access, and no interruptions. Just pure crime storytelling. Try it free for 3 days. Don't wait.
Bitchin' stuff. Dude.
Hit subscribe now on Apple Podcasts and get ahead of the mystery.
You know what I'm saying?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.